Latter-day Saint Home Educators is pleased to bring you this audio presentation recorded live during the May 2023 Home Education Conference held in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania.
So I'm going to tell you a story about my first epiphany in a book discussion. Okay. I was in a small group of enthusiastic homeschool moms who had never read the classics, and we were trying to learn how to do this thing. Okay. And one of the canned questions, because they came out of a book, you know, like a book discussion guide question, was how was Sidney Carton like a savior archetype? And everybody was like, okay, so I'm talking about A Tale of Two Cities, if you don't know, if you didn't get the reference. And everybody was like, oh, he was not. He was like a drunk. And he just, you know, anything but like the savior, right? And I was sitting there and I was thinking about that question and I said, actually, he saved, what's his name, Darcy? No, that's Pride and Prejudice.
Darnay.
What is it?
Darnay.
Darnay. He saved Darnay after all he could do. And I was like, whoa. I thought an original thought, you know? After so many years of being in an educational system that required me to parrot back, regurgitate, whatever word you like, the things that, you know, were taught to me, I finally had that sense of like, wow, I have a brain and I can use it, you know? So book discussions are an enormous part of my life. I have been mentoring, you know, like my little wordy bio says, I've been mentoring parents and teens for just many, many years, more than some of you have been alive, is what I'm thinking. And book discussions are a cornerstone in that mentoring. And I'm sure in your home, most homeschoolers are like, you know, book hoarders, right? So we have books, we know how to use them. And I hope today I can teach you some things about how to lead a book discussion so that you get to epiphanies, right? That you bring your kids to epiphanies. So the beginning of this presentation, I'm actually going to read you a book because we all have to have something in common to move forward, you know? And I didn't want to pick a book and assume that everybody would have read it because that would have been difficult. So this first part, I'm just going to be reading a book. I guess I have something else to tell you. But I'm going to be reading a book by Dr. Seuss. Anyway, when you approach any kind of learning experience where you're the teacher, or actually when you're teaching yourself, you can do what's called a no-feel do, where you identify what is it that I want my students to know, how do I want them to feel, and what do I want them to do. So I created an example here. This is not the best thing for the people in the back. But an example of a no-feel do, I'll just throw out a couple of these. This is my no-feel do for you coming today. This is what I want you to walk away with. You know, this is what I want you to experience. I want you to know that book discussions are a powerful way to leverage learning. I want you to know different developmental stages require different methods. I want you to know how to formulate effective questions. Does that make sense? So I've already got in my mind what I'm trying to accomplish before I come and teach you, right? A couple other ones. I want you to feel how it feels to be part of a book discussion that brings epiphanies. So let's have some epiphanies, right? And I want you to participate and share today. I also want you to go home and do a discussion on the original Little Mermaid with your family. If we go in to a science experiment or anything that we're teaching with an intention for a certain outcome, we actually might achieve it. If we go in with like, well, whatever happens, happens, then we're less likely to have really meaningful learning experiences. So let's get on with reading this book, Yertle the Turtle. It's one of Dr. Seuss's books that I think is just a little lesser known. On the faraway island of Salamisand, Yertle the Turtle was king of the pond. The turtles had everything turtles might need, and they were all happy, quite happy indeed. They were until Yertle, the king of them all, decided the kingdom he ruled was too small. "I'm ruler," said Yertle, "of all that I see. But I don't see enough. That's the trouble with me. This throne that I sit on is too low down. It ought to be higher," he said with a frown. "If I could sit high, how much greater I'd be. What a king. I'd be ruler of all that I see." So Yertle the Turtle lifted his hand, and Yertle the Turtle King gave a command. He ordered 9 turtles to swim to his stone, and using these turtles, he built a new throne. He made each turtle stand on another one's back, and he piled them up in a 9 turtle stack. And then Yertle climbed up. He sat down on the pile. What a wonderful view. He could see most a mile. "All mine," Yertle cried. "Oh, the things I now rule. I'm the king of a cow, and I'm the king of a mule. I'm Yertle the Turtle. Oh, marvelous me, for I am the ruler of all that I see." And all through the morning, he sat up there high, saying over and over, "A great king am I." Until long about noon, then he heard a faint sigh. "What's that?" snapped the king, and he looked down the stack, and he saw at the bottom a turtle named Mac, just a part of his throne. And this plain little turtle looked up, and he said, "Beg your pardon, King Yertle, I've pains in my back and my shoulders and knees. How long must we stand here, Your Majesty? Please." "Silence," the king of turtles barked back. "I'm king, and you're only a turtle named Mac. You stay in your place while I sit here and rule. I'm the king of a cow, and I'm the king of a mule. My throne shall be higher," his royal voice thundered. "So pile up more turtles. I want about 200. "Turtles, more turtles," he bellowed and brayed, and the turtles way down the pond were afraid. They trembled, they shook, but they came, they obeyed. And all of them stepped on the head of poor Mac. One after another, they climbed up the stack. Then Yertle the Turtle was perched up so high he could see 40 miles from his throne in the sky. "I'm Yertle the Turtle. Oh, marvelous me, for I am the ruler of all that I see." Then again, from below, in the great heavy stack, came a groan from that plain little turtle named Mac. "Your Majesty, please, I don't like to complain, but down here below we are feeling great pain. I know up on top you are seeing great sights, but down here at the bottom, we too should have rights. We turtle can't stand it. Our shells will all crack. Besides, we need food. We are starving," groaned Mac. "You hush up your mouth," howled the mighty King Yertle. "You've no right to talk to the world's highest turtle. I rule from the clouds, over land, over sea. There's nothing, no nothing that's higher than me." But while he was shouting, he saw with surprise that the moon of the evening was starting to rise up over his head in the darkening skies. "What's that?" snorted Yertle. "Say, what is that thing that dares to be higher than Yertle the king? I shall not allow it. I'll go higher still. I'll build my throne higher. I can, and I will." But as Yertle the Turtle King lifted his hand, and started to order and give the command, that plain little turtle below in the stack, that plain little turtle whose name was just Mac, decided he'd had enough. And he had. And that plain little lad got a bit mad. And that plain little Mac did a plain little thing. He burped. And his burp shook the throne of the king. And Yertle the turtle, the king of the trees, the king of the air and the birds and the bees, the king of a house and a cow and a mule. Well, that was the end of Turtle King's rule. For Yertle, the king of all Salamisond, fell off his high throne and fell plunk in the pond. And today, the great Yertle, that marvelous he, is king of the mud that is all he can see. And the turtles, of course, all the turtles are free as turtles, and maybe all creatures should be. All right, so I hope you enjoyed that little presentation of Dr. Seuss's genius work. What did it make you think about? Let's have a grown-up conversation for a moment. Did you see any parallels in the world?
Politics,
right?
Slavery.
I mean, these are real things, right? Yeah.
Civil rights.
I love it.
Yes. The power of one person.
The power of one person. Yep. One burp, right, in this case. Sometimes it has unintended consequences.
Unrighteous dominion.
Okay. Great. I love that you brought up a principle, right? Like, this is something that we know happens in human nature. So, yeah.
I thought about parenting.
Tell me why.
Well, sometimes they ask questions and you're like, why are you the king? He says, because I'm Yertle Turtle.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, are my explanations to my children, you know, there are times when I should have reasoning for what I'm doing and am I teaching them why it's like that? And maybe it shouldn't be like that. Or am I just teaching instead of just directing?
I'm glad you brought up parenting because, you know, it takes a little bit of guts to admit that sometimes we're tyrants, right? Sometimes we're maybe like taking our power a little bit too far. What could happen in reading this book to your children to start a discussion, like, about authority power, right?
Yeah.
It could be a starting point.
Absolutely.
So sometimes when we have a need in our family, we can look for the perfect book to you know,
well,
to discuss it.
I thought of my role in the family, and I also thought of another child in my family who also may have those tendencies.
Okay.
And that might be the answer to my problem.
Right, where you can get them to see it themselves, right? Sometimes if we're told, you know, you're being a little tyrant to your brothers and sisters, it does nothing. In fact, it sometimes makes it worse, right? But if we can bring it around to having them say, well, you know, even within themselves, maybe sometimes I do that, then we can have real change happen. I'm going to get you, and then I'll come up to you, okay?
I think of, like, pridefulness and arrogance, and, you know, we achieve something, it makes us feel good, we want more, and Heavenly Father has a way of knocking us down in the mud when we get too prideful.
Okay, for those of you in the recorded audience, this excellent comment was about pride and how sometimes we're never satisfied with what we have, and Heavenly Father sometimes has to, you know, bring us down to the mud. Very nice. Thank you. And you had a comment?
Yeah, I think going along with her comment, we can identify with the characters at different points. Sometimes
okay.
I'm a Yertle and sometimes I've been a Mac. So
yeah.
How does it feel like, you know, when you're a Mac, what do you do? How does it feel to be a, you know, Yertle?
Yeah. Yeah. Did anybody think of, I don't know, groupthink or just following along, being a sheeple, you know, that tendency we have sometimes to, well, that's what they told us to do, so we must have to do it, right? I mean, no homeschooler does that, but yeah, those other people. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, there's this sense of, like, what about all the turtles between Mac and Yertle? There was, you know, supposedly 199 of them who all went along and didn't make any fuss.
Well, and they all had increasingly greater views, too. Like, there was the one directly under him who saw just about as far as he did.
That is such an interesting idea or concept, yeah.
But then in the end, when he's the king of the mud, he has his freedom again, too.
That Yertle has his freedom, yeah. Because he's no longer having to play the role of a tyrant. And
they let him have the same freedom they had. That
okay,
have.
So everybody ends up with the same amount of freedom. I love that. Thank you. Other thoughts? All right. So we're going to talk about how this particular book might be discussed, if you will, with the different developmental stages of your children. And in different stages, they need different things. I put baby to 4 because you certainly could read this to a very young child. And one of the most powerful things you're doing when you're reading aloud to your children is teaching them vocabulary, right? So your discussion with your 2 or 3-year-old is going to be more like, you know, find the cow. Like, you know, like, let's identify what's happening, you know, what's in the picture. Let's talk about what's happening in the story. You're probably not going to actually read the whole thing, right? You're going to probably retell it in simpler words. I mean, it depends on the kid and it depends on their attention span. But those early days, we're working on building vocabulary and also on identifying emotions. Okay, one of the jobs we have with our children is to help them to know the words that go with their feelings. So even like, wow, it would be hard to be Mac. You know, how do you think you felt would be an appropriate question to ask a small child, because then they can imagine, right? They can think, well, what would I feel like if I was at the bottom of the stack? So these little, usually one-on-one book discussions that we're having in the early years are so important. But you usually have to wait a few years to get into the deeper, like, let's talk about democracy. You know? Like, you have to start with where they are and help them to grow. Now, 5 to 8, we're moving more into where they're understanding plot. And you can ask questions that maybe are like foreshadowing. You know, what do you think is going to happen when Yertle gets higher? And they can predict, right? They can start to, they're learning that stories have beginnings, middles, and ends. And you can kind of like get them to start seeing patterns within those stories. And just asking them how they feel about what it is that the story entails. You know, you can start asking them to predict, to share their emotions, and answer questions that they ask you. Okay. In the ages 9 to 12, they're really starting to have more content beyond just the moment, what's happening. You could start to tie it to other things, right? You could start to say, well, you know, do you know any other stories that a king had too much power? Or you could say, you remember when we read, you know, the king, what is it called? The king that has no clothes, the king without.
The emperor's,
yeah, thank you. I'm like, what's that one's called? That would be a parallel story that you could start tying together. Okay, so as they're aging and getting developmentally more capable, we want to have discussions that, you know, that broaden what it is that they're learning and thinking about. Okay, now my favorite ages are the 12 and ups. We experienced an adult discussion just a few minutes ago, so maybe you could draw some conclusions from that. But I love the 12 and up crowd. I love to go deep with them in things. About the age of 14 is when their critical thinking skills really start developing. That's when you can, you know, delve into logic and, you know, help them to see choices and consequences and help them to make connections to other areas of their life. And those kinds of discussions make the books more meaningful in your home. You start to have a shared vocabulary, if you will, with your teens that is extending beyond just your own relationship, right? So you can bring up the characters in the stories that you've read together in real life situations and tie them in. So there's a lot of depth that happens in those teen years, and harnessing it is one of the ways that you can really strengthen your relationship with them and help them to see, you know, choices and consequences, and so that they don't have to make all the mistakes themselves, right? If we could show them in the book what happens to the, you know, or the play or the movie or whatever, you can have these discussions about a movie. If we can take those characters' choices and help them to internalize and think about what caused them to get to that point and what, you know, personal weaknesses maybe they didn't work on that they should have, right? So those kinds of conversations can go deep. Now we're gonna talk about effective. Okay, so I have to tell you this handout that, like I said, will eventually be up, but I'm happy to share it with you on Google Drive. I have categories of questions in there, so you don't have to like reinvent the wheel here. But I'm gonna help you with some mentor skills for getting better answers out of your children. I don't know if you see you ask the question and they're like, I don't know, right? So let's get really good at that. Let's get really good at, not at the I don't know part, but at the getting them to go beyond the I don't know. I feel like I have to say this. There is a relationship component to this. You know, I can tell you all the question asking strategies that I've ever experienced, right? But that's not gonna make up for an environment where they feel shamed or an environment where they don't feel like it's safe to say what they actually think. And I know you're saying, like, you know, I would never do that, but sometimes we kind of do that, right? Like if we correct or put down an idea or a thought, then we start to lose the ability to get them, to draw them out. So that's like a different set of skills than what we're going to talk about today, okay? But if we have a good relationship with our kids and they know they can offer an opinion that is different than ours or that's, you know, bizarre or crazy or whatever, they know that they can offer it, then you're going to have more meaningful discussions than if you're trying to get them always to answer the way you want them to answer, right? Am I making sense here?
Yes.
Okay, so that in and of itself is another set of conversations. So the environment in which you do this, sometimes it's going to be like a formal, you know, families all sitting around. I'm sure you do this with your scripture studies, right? Where you're discussing the scriptures, and everybody in the family is involved. Okay, that is one way to do it. It can also be like you're reading aloud and having like mini discussions as you go through the book, right? Stopping every once in a while talking about something. That way you're enhancing the experience for everybody. But sometimes they're completely informal. You're making dinner and the kids at the kitchen stool just telling you about the book that they read. Maybe you haven't even read it. You're still having a book discussion and you can go, uh-huh, uh-huh, uh-huh. You know, while they talk, Or you can engage and say, well, I haven't read that book. So how did the author treat good and evil? You know, or get down to the assumption of the book, get them to think about the assumption behind the book. So sometimes they're completely informal. And, you know, there's no one right way to do this. It's kind of depends on the situation. I've always created opportunities for my kids to discuss books in groups of their peers, which I think is so important because, you know, you're old and what you think isn't always cool, okay? But if they can have a great discussion led by a mentor who's worked at their ability to ask great questions and to gatekeep and to elicit responses from people, it's a pretty powerful way. So I start my kids when they're like 8, you know, once a month or once every 2 months. Let's read this book and invite some friends over, you know, have them read the book and we'll have a party. I mean, I make it a party, right? So there's the in the family, there's one-on-one, there's formal one-on-one, there's informal one-on-one, and there's in the car, right? We're listening to the audiobook. Let's pause that for a minute, talk about it. Okay, so there's lots of different environments based on what's happening in your family dynamics and that kind of thing. So I have here, I hate this, like, the small screen and the large audience, you know, because I know you guys can't see the screen. But I have, like, a list of some hints on how to lead the discussion in the most effective way. So the first one is to give a prequel. Okay, so before the book is even read, I love to give some kind of a prequel that says, wow, this book is going to change you. Let me tell you how it changed me. Okay, so for instance, have any of you read The Endless Step? It's a gulag story of a girl coming of age. My prequel to that book was, I read this book when I was 13, and I have never peeled a potato without thinking of it. So I'm not telling them what it's about, right? I'm just like hooking them, giving them some reason to want to read the book, okay? So that's a great before you read the book hint. To understand that your purpose as the one who's leading the discussion is to elicit epiphanies, okay? It's not to make sure they understood the book, although there may be some questions that you want to make sure they understood before you elicit an epiphany. But fundamentally, it's to get them to realize something that they've never thought about before. And you'll know when it happens because their face lights up. You know that you've made the impact. You want to ask open-ended, thoughtful questions, and you want to base those questions on your no-feel-do. What do I want them to walk away from this book? You know, what lessons do I want them to walk away from this book with? The fourth is to not answer your own question, okay? So if you ask a question and there's silence, it's okay. Give them a minute or say, would you like me to rephrase the question? But if you just answer it and tell them what they were supposed to learn, it's a turnoff. They didn't have an epiphany, and they won't remember. But they will remember if you ask a question that elicits their thinking and their thoughts, and once they say it out loud, they own their epiphany, right? They're not going to forget it because it was their own original thought and they spoke it. So it's a very, very powerful moment. You have to be okay with silences. Absolutely, especially with teens. You know, little kids tend to want to talk all the time and ask a million questions, and it's a lot easier. Teens are working a little harder here, and it requires us to have patience and to let them know that it's safe to speak, right? And it's sometimes going to require you to reword the question or give them a little extra time. If you're doing it in a group, it's your whole family or you have a group of friends, you want to be aware of those who are not participating and ask yourself in that moment, how can I get her to respond? okay, that one that hasn't spoken up at all, how can I bring her into this conversation? Sometimes that's a relationship skill. And then sometimes it's asking a question that applies to that person. And then sometimes it's asking them specifically, you know, Mary, would you like to share with us, you know, what you think, all right? One thing that I've found works really well with internal processors, okay, people who have to think through their thoughts before they say them, as opposed to external processors who talk, and don't even necessarily know what their opinion is yet because they're just developing it while they talk. But with internal processors, sometimes if you say, I'm going to ask a question, and I'm going to give everybody a couple minutes to think about it, and then I'm going to go around and I'm going to ask each one of you what you think the answer is. Then that gives the internal processors time to work through what their thoughts are. And then I can't recommend this highly enough. It was such a game changer for me. There's a it's a little like pamphlet ebook thing that Anelody Milne wrote called The Mentor Handbook. It's available on Amazon for like $3 or something. And she teaches in it the 5 mentor skills. And if you practice those 5 mentor skills, you're going to be much, much better at leading colloquium as well as building your relationship with your students. So it's in another presentation. In another presentation I'm doing on another day in another room, I talk about one of those skills. But anyway, that's just a recommendation that I can highly recommend because it really changed my game. So, all right. So I'm going to share with you some things that will save you from terrible mistakes I've made. Not terrible, but you know, where it didn't go as well. All right. So I've already said that you're going to use open-ended questions. If I ask a yes-no question, the discussion's over very quickly, right? But if I ask an open-ended question, it's not. But we have to get beyond that. So you want to avoid giving the answer in the question. Okay, so an example I have on this slide is, wouldn't the character have been happier if he hadn't gone into a life of crime? I'm already telling you what I think the answer is with that question, right? I'm already telling you wickedness never was happiness. And so what is somebody supposed to say to that, right? There's not much to say when you've already told them the answer. And you may have experienced that in other learning environments. You may have experienced that in a Sunday school. You may have experienced that when you went to school, right? Where you know you can't answer because the answer is implied in the question. So instead of that, we want to ask a question that brings them to the same conclusion. So here's an example from that previous question. Did you think the consequences fit the crimes he committed? And then it's not a, you know, here's the right answer. It's like, well, let's talk about, you know, he went to jail, he lost his family, he lost his job, I mean, whatever, like the things were, right? Did those consequences fit? I mean, like, think to Les Mis. He stole some bread. Did the consequences fit the crime? Like, it didn't. And to talk that through and to think that through is going to lead to a good discussion, whereas just, you know, should we steal bread is kind of not as good of a question. So we don't want to limit our discussion to just the content of the book. You know, when we talked about Yertle the Turtle, we talked about politics, we talked about pride, we talked about unrighteous dominion, right? We talked about things beyond just what happened in the book. So you can bring the lessons from the book into their own lives. Have you ever felt like Mac is a question that would fall in that category, right? Like, let's talk about your human experience and apply it to what this book teaches us, right? Have you ever felt your vote didn't count, right? That, those are things that we've all felt before, right? So we want to avoid questions that only have speculative answers. This is different than, you know, a question that, that has many, many answers, but if I were to ask, well, why do you think Dr. Seuss wrote this book? You can only speculate what might have motivated him to buy it, I mean, to write it, right? So there's not like a great answer to that question. It's not gonna bring anybody any insights that are gonna change them, right? So instead of that, we're gonna create questions that don't require mind reading. So here's an example. What impact could this book have if every American read it? You know, how might that change the political landscape, right? How might people feel about their responsibility to be a good citizen, to vote? You know, you can bring in the broader pictures instead of just speculating on what an author was the author's motivation. So the last one is to take general macro questions and find a way to apply them to themselves. So a macro question would be like, did you like the book? It's not a bad question, but it's so broad that it's not always helpful to go there, right? I mean, it can be, but it can also just fall flat. Oh, it was good, you know, that's a pretty typical response, right? So a better question would be an application to self question. How did the character's life parallel your own? Okay, so that makes you think about what's happened in your life that has been similar to what happened to the character in the book, right? So another example is, which character did you resonate with? All right. So I found that the most moving, you know, epiphany-filled questions have almost always been a follow-up question. Okay, so you ask the first great question and you get some maybe general answers or answers that don't, you know, don't seem like you've gotten to the bottom of it, right? So I have one answer type that I call the veil, okay? And you get the sense that that student has some deeper thoughts, but maybe, you know, he or she doesn't know how to bring it up. So you hear an answer to a question, and in that answer, you just sense that, like, you've got more in you than this, right? So that's what I'm talking about when you have this veil experience. There's a couple of different ways you can approach it. One is to ask a clarifying question, basically inviting them to tell you more, okay? So, I'm not sure what you mean by that. Do you mind sharing what you're thinking? That would be a clarifying question. And in the process of better articulating their thoughts, they are oftentimes brought to their epiphany, even though they were just sort of on the surface of it before, right? The second one is to restate the answer in such a way that you can bring them closer to their message. Do you mean that sometimes you act like this character but wish you didn't? Is that what you're trying to say? So sometimes you can kind of like help them along to what you feel like they are trying to say by asking this sort of, you know, let's examine this a little bit more and figure it out, right? And then they're like, yeah, yeah, that's exactly what I mean. You know what I mean? Where you've kind of dug out the gem and then they own it because they think they said it, but really you just, you know, anticipated what they meant. So the second one is the factoid, okay? And the factoid is where you get the pat answer, you know, the Sunday school answer, right? And, you know, some examples of that would be like, I don't know, like it feels like a book report. You know, they're just saying what happened and they're not, you know, going deeper, right? And so the answer for that is to do one of these things. You ask for the significance of that event or plot element. Like, okay, yeah, that is what happened. But why do you think the author put that in the story? What happened to the character's arc as you read that? Like, how did the character change in your mind? So we're kind of like, you know, by identifying the significance, we also are sometimes helping them to see why they brought that up in the first place, why it was an answer to the question. We can again ask them to apply it to our own life, and we can ask for an application to something in the world today. Book discussions are a great way to bring up current events, because most kids don't, like, you know, read the news. I mean, they just don't. I've found that even most teens don't. So if you can relate it to something, well, how about that presidential election we just had? What do you think happened, you know, in relation to the thing you're talking about in the book, right? So you can get them thinking that they actually know some stuff that's worth exploring, okay? So that's the factoid, ways to help the factoid move along. And the pat answer, that's the Sunday school answer, the worn out and tired answer that they're parroting. So some examples is, you know, because we need an education, you know, or to follow the prophet. Like, they just are, you know, throwing out the answer that has been tried and true. It's worked. It's worked for everything else in their life, and you want to take them deeper. So some strategies here are to just not let it sit there all worn out and meaningless. There is something behind it, and even though they're like dying it, right? It's, you know, we gotta follow the prophet. You wanna not let it lay there and go, oh, good job. You know what I mean? Like, you want to actually dig a little deeper. So you can ask them something like, and what happens if you don't? Or what happens if that's not the case? Or what happens when you see a friend struggling, right? So that you can jar a little something out of their brains and help them to identify the deeper thought, the deeper principle, the more important concept. And then the third one is to get sassy, okay? And ask a question like, who cares? Don't you think it's way too much work? Okay, that's what we call moving the elephant question. You know, like, if this matters, like, prove it to me. You know, get the hackles up and get them thinking about what it is that they really believe in. Sometimes those kinds of answers, where they're just pat answers, they're just Sunday school answers, are because they haven't dug deep enough to know why those answers are true, right? So if you can give them a little sass and make them defend themselves, they actually have a chemical change that happens as they sort of stand up and take responsibility for their answer. That doesn't happen if you just leave it laying there, okay? So those are not something you wanna do all the time, because it might damage your relationship. But when you know the moment is right and you have the opportunity to, yeah, make them defend themselves, they're gonna have, you know, a rise in their chemical brain, you know, their brain chemistry, and they're going to actually own their answer. So there's all kinds of ways in which we can take, you know, I'm going to say boring book discussions, I'm going to say ineffective book discussions, and we can ask ourselves, You know, how can I up this game? How can I get my kids to go deeper? How can I get myself to go deeper, right? How can I understand this in a new way? So I have a few minutes to take some questions or even experiences you've had struggling with leading a book discussion, and I'm happy to try to address them. Yes.
So
I'm going to stand closer to you so the recording gets.
Sounds
it.
Good. So my question is, if when you pause to talk about something, have you ever had kids go, "No, just keep reading," like they don't want to stop and talk?
That's such a good sign, right? They're so totally engaged in the book that they want it to keep going. But who has the power in that situation?
Parent.
Right. So what if you did it when it really mattered? I call it when it's a 10, okay? It's not a 4 thing to discuss. It's not a 6 thing. It's a 10. Like, you know the lesson in this is something your kids really need to learn. And you can kindly and, you know, say, "I know, I'm excited to hear the next chapter too. It's going to be awesome. But I can't go on until we talk about what he just did here. Did you notice how he stood up for his friends? Would you ever do that?" And then, like, you know, you're just guiding them from the, "I want to hear the next chapter, I want to hear the next chapter," to, "Let's stop and digest a little bit." And obviously, you know your children, you know what they're capable of in terms of attention span and all of that. But there's times when you have those tens, you're having an epiphany, you know it could change this child, and taking advantage of it is probably good training, right? And worth the interruption.
Sometimes if I turn the question back on them and I say, "Why? What are you feeling? What are you thinking? Why are you connecting
with it?" Oh, I love
that. Then it puts them together and they are able to make the connection with the story of, this is why we're reading it, because it feels good to read about how this person's standing up for what's right even though they're alone or whatever it is, and helping them make the connections of, this is what feels good and this is why it feels good. And you can testify of the spirit. And it's like when we read about good things, you feel good.
Yeah.
And so by having them maybe articulate why do you like
why
this?
Do you want to keep going? That is a fabulous thought. Thank you. Other questions or situations you found yourself in? Please.
I hope this makes sense.
I'm going to walk closer to you too.
I hope this makes sense without giving too much information, but like, my kids are at the age now where they have certain strong opinions about things, and it leads into other discussions. Mm-hmm. And because, like, reading is such a sacred time, or I want them to be able to share whatever they're thinking with me, I'm having a hard time trying to figure out where to draw the line between just listening and preaching if I think it's getting off track a little. Does that make sense? Like, if they're struggling with certain, like, well, why would they? I'm trying to do it without giving
them. Yeah, I understand.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But if it's something that I think, ooh, I don't know if I agree with you on that one, I want to reinforce family values, but at the same time, I want them to feel free to discuss with me.
Okay.
Does that make sense? So where do you draw the line?
The comments that are, I want to make sure I understand.
Yeah.
The comments that are coming out, you're like, well, now you've gone off the path. Now you're in the
especially like when you're talking about reading the news or whatever. Okay. We don't get too much into the news, okay. But because like civics is something we have to teach in our state, we'll talk about different news stories. And if there's something that like they've talked to their friends about and it's different than maybe what we've talked about as a family, I want them to be able to share that information with me.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I want to reinforce our values as a family. Like, is there a good balance between those two?
Okay, so hopefully everybody heard her. It's an excellent question that's sort of beyond the book discussion and more into how do you raise teens who are aware of what's going on in the world, able to form their own opinions, and my time is up, and have the family values as part of you know, your family culture. And the answer is not simple, right? And I can't even do it because we're out of time, and I have to respect that. But I have a booth the end of this hallway, and I'm happy to talk to anybody on any of the subjects. books are so, so valuable in your education that's happening in your home. And I hope you've pulled a thing or two that can make the discussions that go on more effective and that you can go deeper. So thank you for coming. It was a pleasure to be with you.
Latter-day Saint Home Educators is a nonprofit, all-volunteer organization dedicated to providing inspiration to homeschool families. We hope you enjoyed this recording. If you are interested in listening to more recordings or would like to participate in a future conference, please visit our website at ldshe.org.